will now move on to our second case for this morning, United States against Todd Hansen. I'll give Mr. Bonnet a minute to get ready to come up.
May it please the court. My name is Eric Bonnet, and I'm here representing appellant defendant Todd Hansen. Your Honors, the central issue in this case is whether the district court erred by changing the sentence that was originally imposed upon my client to one that was expressly rejected both by my client and by the judge at the original sentencing hearing.
But actually, Mr. Bonnet, it seems to me, I understand the point you're making, but we need to be clear, as the government points out, about what order or orders are actually before us. Because to say that this strikes one as kind of a comedy of errors is the least I can say about all this activity that goes on. And I guess you would agree that your notice of appeal is timely as to the August 11th order, for example. August 11th.
That's correct.
That would be the one that's filed on the very last day. And isn't there a later August 13?
I think they made some technical corrections to the judgment.
We don't want you on death row. We want you in the prison camp at Terre Haute.
Right. Well, and then there was also an order. We had filed an objection to the revised magistrate's report and to vacate the superseding judgment, and that was denied. And I think that's included in the all subsequent orders
because,
and judgment.
Here is at least one way of looking at this, which I don't think is actually terribly favorable to your client. And that would be to say that we do have appellate jurisdiction, I'll just say the August 11th order, but the only thing we can do is review whether that order itself was entered under an appropriate ground of authority. And that one is where you've got to rely on either Criminal Rule 35 or 36, neither of which seems to me have any potential application to this. So we would say you can't order that. And I think at that point it probably defaults back to the judgment that the district court enter. The last judgment the district court seems to have had authority to enter was the one with the recommendation for VOA and 180 days.
Well, I think it goes, the question is what was the sentence that was valid up to that point?
Well, but the prior question for the Court of Appeals is what is before us? Just to take a counterfactual, if Mr. Hansen had never filed a notice of appeal, mm-hmm. And I guess what would have happened is the 90-day period of revocation would have been the one that governed, and probably would have served that someplace. Actually, he'd be done by now or close to. And whether the district court had authority under Rule 36 or not never would have been raised by anybody. But that's not what happened. We have a notice of appeal from something, and I'm trying to figure out what is properly before us and whether we have authority to dig back as far as you would like us to go.
Well, the notice of appeal is from the change in the judgment and from then the denial of our motion to change that.
But if we thought that Rule 36... I guess we all agree that this is not a Rule 35 situation. It's so far beyond the time limit of 7 days in Rule 35, I just don't see how you can use that.
I would agree that. I mean, unless you can somehow bootstrap a series of opinions.
Okay, so if you vacate the August 11th, in other words, the 90-day order, saying on the grounds that it's an improper modification of the judgment, you only have one judgment before that. That's the 180-day order. So how could you possibly get back any further than that? Because the magistrate judge had authority to make recommendations, but only the district judge had the authority to sign the judgment.
Well, because the district court judge, I mean, is adopting the magistrate's report and recommendation. The oral judgment, you know, that was pronounced by the magistrate was, you know, I want, you know, 6 months community corrections. I don't care how it's done.
But
you
that's
know,
not a judgment. That's Judge Cannelli's point. That's a recommendation to the district judge for sure. And let's assume you're right, that the magistrate judge really thought that this man was going to do better at VOA. But it's not the district court's judgment.
Well, I mean, certainly if, you know, Mr. Vaughn had objected to the report, or I guess the district court judge could have even done it sua sponte and said, I'm rejecting what Judge Foster did. Instead, this is what I think needs to be done. I think he would have to have a new hearing to do that. If all this had happened 2 days after because the district court judge said, hey, I'm rejecting the magistrate's report, yes, I think that would be correct. I mean, the district court can override the magistrate, but that's not what happened here. The district court said, I'm adopting what Judge Foster did. In fact, he did it twice. Once he enters the judgment right after the oral hearing, and then when the magistrate comes out with the written report a week or so later, there's a new order from Judge Lawrence adopting that.
I know that, but then if you're going to look at that July 17 judgment, it actually reads correctly. It commits Hansen to the custody of the BOP for the 180 days, and it uses the word recommended to the BOP that there's designation to Volunteers of America. Now, I'm distressed that nobody, you know, not the AUSA, not the magistrate, not the district court judge, not anyone is bringing up to the surface the fact that this really is only a recommendation. This is this is not a new rule of law. This has been around for a long time. BOP puts, in fact, we've had circuit conference meetings where the district judges complain that BOP doesn't listen to their recommendations enough. I think everybody is aware these are just recommendations.
Just so I'm clear, you're asking about the July 17th.
So in other words, I'm looking at the July 17 judgment, which strikes me as the judgment of the district court, and it's technically correct in that it doesn't command the BOP to do anything. It recommends to BOP that he be designated to Volunteers of America. But the use of the word recommend implies to me that BOP may or may not be persuaded.
Well, it uses the, you know, the usual terminology for, you know, a judgment that recommends a sentence.
Well, legally correct terminology.
But it's adopting what the magistrate did, which was, I want him at the Volunteers of America facility no matter what. And, you know, of course, in the background, you also have the Bureau of Prisons person, you know, the probation officer.
That's not a Bureau of Prisons person. That's a court person.
I mean, you know, she's the one who's saying, oh, this is how you do it.
I'm wondering why they didn't come up with this, because as Judge Wood said, this is sentencing 101. I mean, you cannot direct commit somebody to community confinement in this situation. It's sentencing 101. And I'm wondering why nobody, I mean, probation, government, you, magistrate judge, district judge.
I wasn't the attorney at that point, but...
Who was the attorney actually at some point in the hearing before the magistrate judge said something that indicated to me that he knew perfectly well it was just a recommendation. I'm hoping BOP, I forget quite the phrasing, but it was something like that.
Well, and I would also point out that the, you know, the I mean, Foster is actually going away from the plea agreement and coming up with this compromise.
The plea agreement was just a recommendation.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, I think it just illustrates how strong, you know, his belief was that, you know, make sure he gets to the VOA.
So let me ask you this question. So if in fact the modification of the sentence, in other words, the August 11th modification, is not a proper application of Rule 35 or 36, mm-hmm. then you default back to the other judgment. There's only one, and it's worse for your client. So it's worse for your client because it's 6 months, not three. I mean, is that sort of been thought through here?
Certainly the July 17th one by itself would be. I think the question is, though, you know, you've still got this. You know, if you're down to
the thing you're advocating for here was something that could have been done in the first instance. In other words, revoke, impose 1 day, time considered served or whatever, and then six months in community confinement. But nobody did that. Nobody wanted to do that. Nobody said they wanted to do that. And so there's just no way on this type of an appeal that you can get back to that. It doesn't. You can't walk it back to something that never existed.
Well, I think the key is whether the oral sentence, you know, which is very clear of where he was supposed to
go. The oral sentence is something that the judge had no authority to do.
Well, but there's two ways that it could have been done to make it possible. You know, one was, you know, if the BOP had done what everyone expected it to do, you know, it could be done with the recommendation. But it could also have been done by doing it as, a condition of supervised release. And that was, you know, when we appealed to,
When you challenged the report or whatever it was.
When we finally challenged the report and the superseding judgment, that was Judge Lawrence's response that, oh, well, we want, you know, we want to get him off of court supervision. I think if you go back and look at the oral, you know, decision on the July 14th, I mean, he's, real, I think, very clearly ambivalent whether it's done as supervised release or through BLP.
I want to follow up on something Judge Cannelli just said, because frankly, when I was looking at this, I wondered to what extent the potential adverse effect of this appeal was clear to Mr. Hansen, whether this was even an appeal you'd want to dismiss or something. I don't know. It's not a decision I would ask you to make standing here right now, but it's really hard. When I look at Rule 36, which is entitled Clerical Error, whatever we're talking about here, it's not a clerical error. It's a mistake about authority of the court to take certain actions.
Well, I think the way this court has described it is, you know, the court, a district judge can correct a judgment to be what it actually ordered. It can't change it to something else. And I think what was actually ordered, although the court didn't actually have the power to do it, it did, but not the way that the written judgment did it.
Basically, your point was that if the judge improperly translated what he thought into paper, that the judge can do that under Rule 36. That was your point, right?
Right. Yeah, that you can go back to what you actually did in the oral sentence. You can't change it to something else. In this case, that was something that was expressly rejected in the written.
The problem in this case is that the oral sentence is not something that's doable. So then you have to go back even farther, and that's why I use the analogy of walking it back. You have to go back even farther to what you thought was in the judge's head at the time, because there is no way to direct commit the person there on the authority of the court. Putting aside what BOP does, nobody has any control over them.
Well, they couldn't.
The only way to do it would be to revoke the supervised release and reimpose supervised release with a condition of the 6 months or the 90 days or whatever it is, but that doesn't appear in the record anywhere. I mean, there's no way you get back to that.
Well, I think I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
That's fine. Mr. Vaughn.
My name is Joe Vaughn, and I'm the assistant U.S. attorney who represented the government before what I think
You're
Judge
not here,
Woodkin.
I assume, to fight with the two judges who have just been interrogating your opponent.
Very well. And I represented the government before, I guess what Judge Wood has accurately described as a comedy of errors. The record.
Why didn't you speak up when the magistrate judge is saying, oh, you know, we'll just have him at VOA when, as Judge Cannelli puts it, it's sentencing 101, that you can't, it's not within the judge's power to assure that outcome.
I had never heard of a direct commitment before. Probation and the court, I think the court had questions on a direct commitment. Probation seemed fairly assured that was something that could be done. I had never heard of it. I was negligent for not having brought that up and challenged
the judge. You didn't fight with the judge.
That's correct. I did not.
That's usually a pretty bright way to start. Don't fight with the judge.
But you could have said to the judge, you know, of course, this will be a recommendation, not a directive to BOP, because there are mountains of cases that say that. And there are tactful ways of steering the judge in the direction that spare you from having to be here at the Court of Appeals.
You know, and obviously that is a...
You kind of like the trip anyway, didn't you?
I always love coming up here. So it's always very enjoyable. Obviously you're exactly right, Judge. I mean, there could have been ways I could have approached that tactfully. I did not. That is my fault. I take responsibility for that. But it does not entitle Hansen then to have some kind of a further...
Doesn't change the rules, no matter what.
That's correct.
It does not change the rules. So the government's position at this point is that, I mean, I think your position in light of some other cases we have is that we do have appellate jurisdiction here, but it's only over the August 11th order, and the only question about the August 11th order is whether there was any authority to enter it.
That's correct.
And your answer would be, of course, no.
No.
Because there's no clerical... There's nothing specific enough to walk back to, as Judge Cannelli was saying.
And it wasn't even a... in fact, what Mr. Hansen had advocated was not a correction of a clerical error. It was an amendment of a sentence, or trying to go back and interpret what may have been in the mind of the magistrate judge.
So which amendment, though? I mean, one amendment he's suggested now is one day of revocation and 179 of supervised release, at which point the court does have the authority to say it's going to be in a community confinement, you know, community center. Another modification would be to say it's not going to be 180 days of revocation, it's going to be only 90 days of revocation. Is there any way to walk it back to that? Because that at least we have in the record from the district court judge.
Taking the one that would be the revocation, one day in prison, 6 months supervised release, served at the Volunteers of America, I don't think we ever get to that, because in Mr. Hansen's objections to the report and recommendation, he specifically raised that to the magistrate judge. The magistrate judge says that was never my intention. My intention was to revoke, no further supervised release, you're in the Bureau of Prisons. So that option was raised, and it's...
Right, and I think you have a very strong argument at that point, but if we were to erase and just say there was no authority to enter the August 11th order, I guess another way of phrasing my question is, where does that leave things? Because there are this series of orders that keep coming out from mid-July forward, and if that really just pushes us back one notch, then he has 90 days of revocation. If it pushes us all the way back, and do we even have authority to say anything about how far it pushes us back?
I think we end up pushed all the way back to the original judgment.
Why do we have the authority to do that, since we do not have appellate jurisdiction to review anything that happened before August 11th? The notice of appeal is too late.
And then we would stick with the 90 days.
So actually, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Is there some scenario under the law under which simply a decision saying that the August 11th order was of no force and effect leaves in force the district court judge's, I'll say, amended judgment that it's going to be a 90-day period. Does the government have a position on this? I mean,
You didn't cross appeal, right? I mean, you're not asking to vacate the last order. You're just saying dismiss the appeal and leave things where they were at the end.
That's what we had advocated. We said, I mean, there's no, the government's
90 days.
Right.
I mean, that's what our recommendation had been to the magistrate judge. I mean, the record is horrible, but I think it was just the court trying to effectuate a sentence that it thought was fair, based upon its original mistaken assumption that the government, I guess, was complicit with, that it could do a direct commitment. And so now we're in a situation where the judge said, I don't want you doing 180 days in prison. I want you to only do 90. I'm going to try to accomplish it in this manner. And then, unfortunately, based upon the appeal, we're almost back at a situation
is
now.
Is he out on bond all this time?
Yes, he has. It's been under the conditions of the original supervised release. So for all intents and purposes, he has remained on supervised release ever since the day the petition was filed, which would be about a week before the supervised release was set to...
By now.
Yes.
Right. Well, I hope that word of this litigation gets back to the probation officer got things running off on, or contributed to getting things on the wrong track here.
It will. I don't know if the court had any other questions or anything I could clarify for the court. If not, the government will stand on its brief in this matter.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Bonnet?
Yeah, we wish we could just challenge the BOP decision, but law doesn't work that way, unfortunately. I think the, our argument is that you go back to the oral hearing and come up with a way to make that happen. And I think there's a couple ways. I mean, ironically, if we, could have been just put him on the VOA as term of supervised release to be done by now. But, our position is that you go back to the oral sense. The oral sense controls. I think it's clear that it would control if this was the same judge issuing both opinions. I don't think the fact that you've got different judges should matter because this wasn't, I'm rejecting the report and changing it. This was, adopting it. So,
one piece of unsolicited advice, just to pick up on a point Judge Wood made before, you might want to walk out of here and think about the conversation you're going to be having with your client if the decision is this, the judgment is reversed and now he's doing 6 months, not three, and maybe think about what Judge Wood suggested. Just a thought. It's up to you, obviously, and him.
I will consider that. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.